Welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast that explores the creative and curious world of work through monologues and conversations with artists, creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, and change makers. It's that time of year where the topics on many people's minds are burnout and self-care. Today's guest is Dr. Sharon Grossman, a burnout and success coach who helps people create the lives they want. In this conversation, she shares how the PEP model, programming, environment, and personality, helps people find clarity as they ask themselves the question, who are you going to be next? Sharon also answers a crucial question, is burnout inevitable or can it be avoided? Whether you're deep in burnout or you can feel it setting in, I hope you'll be able to decode your burnout so that you can find hope. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/577.
The thing that I think fascinates me more than anything is the way that our mind works, especially when it comes to the subconscious, because I don't know if you've heard this, but 90% of everything that we do is subconscious, is basically automated. So we're not really in control as much as we think we are. And so I'm like fascinated by the mind and all of these automated processes and your programming and why we sabotage and your belief structure, all of that.
Ooh, like where did that interest in the subconscious come? Was it because you were stuck in some patterns that you didn't like?
No, more because I've been working as a psychologist for the last 20 years and just started to see patterns with a lot of my clients. And then, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, obviously you have people who don't necessarily know that they're doing something. So they're like in complete blind spot. And then you have the people who know that they're doing something and it's not working for them, but they don't know how to get out of it. And then you have the people that are trying all different things. So there's like all different levels of things that I see. But ultimately, the question that keeps coming up is, how do I change, right? Interestingly, then there's so much resistance to the change because,
right.
And that's, again, if you go back to like the brain and the way that we're structured, is we're not really interested in change primarily because our brain kind of identifies the familiar as safe. And so if you start to do things differently, it brings up all of these unknowns and then we get into anxiety mode.
Exactly. I mean, when 90% of our life, our day-to-day life is subconscious, like how do you begin to approach change then with that much resistance?
So this is where your conscious mind has to override your subconscious. And so it takes a little bit of coaching to get you there, right? Yeah. Because there's a lot of resistance on the subconscious level. And even sometimes consciously, we try to rationalize why we don't want to change, why it's not so bad where we are, why it would be so much work. And it's, you know, we can probably just manage, or it won't last forever and eventually it'll get better. So we just have to be patient, and anything but to actually do the work, you know, is kind of how we're programmed. And we think that we're making these conscious decisions, but really it's our subconscious mind that says, you don't need to change. What do you need that for? We already got a program. It's all good over here, you know?
Wow. So, I mean, where do you even start to begin that process then? Because like, obviously, we can't stay in that safety all the time, can we?
I mean, certainly you can, because it's not like the lack of change is necessarily going to kill you. Mm-hmm. It does very small percentage of the time. But for most people, they just are happy to get by. I think what you have is either the people that are super motivated because they're your super high achievers and they're like, you know, I know that I could do better. Tell me all the things.
Right.
Right. If you're like that Asprey guy and you're just like, let me bulletproof my life, then I'm going to look for all the hacks and I'm going to figure it out. And so you have a little bit of that. But most of the time, because I think he's really exceptional, most of the time what we see is people are suffering. And so when you come from a point of pain, you are more motivated to put a solution into practice in order to get out of pain. And so that's what kind of another thing that we're programmed for, right, is to move away from pain and towards pleasure. And so as much as we don't like to change, if we're in pain, that's the one time your subconscious mind is like, this is good.
Right. Well, and pain is, on one hand, is very objective, but then there's so many subjective layers of what pain actually means for ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's all very subjective. And what's painful to one person is not necessarily painful to another person, or what is something that you can get by with. You know, some people have like such a huge threshold, whereas other people are like, are you kidding me? Like, there's no way that I would be able to survive doing what this person's doing, right?
Right.
So it's all very individual. And also, I think a lot of it has to do with our values, right? So if you're not in alignment with your values, that's a source of pain. And that's where I see a lot of people burning out, because maybe they have a certain value and the way that they're either engaging with their work, or the way that their work is affecting their lifestyle, or the way that their organization is managing things or doing certain things. If it's not in alignment with the things that you truly value, then it kind of creates some friction. And that's where over time it becomes a chronic stressor.
Oh, interesting. That misalignment between values and reality is, whoa, like my brain just kind of exploded a little bit there.
I love
because
that.
Because it's like, just to kind of think through it out loud a little bit, is like we hear how important values are. But then it takes time and effort to really like bring them into practice. I don't know. I don't know where to go with that, because I feel a little stuck in that thought.
Well, you know, coming back to your original question, which is where do we start?
Yeah.
I think sometimes when you come into coaching, that's where coaches typically will start you, is looking at either your stuck point and kind of what your goal is, where do you want to be, and then figuring out how to get you from A to Z, or they start you from your values. And it's like, what do you truly value? And this is not a question or an exercise that we typically will take ourselves through outside of coaching, correct?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's not like, what are my values today?
Yeah. It's not like you sit there and ask yourself these questions, but like, let me journal about this, you know,
even though that's probably something we should be doing.
It probably is. There's a lot of things that you probably should be doing, but let's not go there. So what I like to say is that typically in coaching, that's something that you get to explore, and then it starts to come together. You're like, oh, that's why I feel this way, because, you know, at my job site, they're being super unethical, and I am somebody who values, you know, fairness, or, you know, I really value having a balanced lifestyle, and this job is basically sucking all of my hours. So I have no time left for myself. You know, like if you start looking at what your values are and what's actually happening at work, it starts to make sense why you feel the way that you do.
Yeah. And is that where burnout comes in? Is it fully misalignment of values, or are there other factors that play?
Oh my goodness. There are so many different factors. It really is something that manifests differently for everybody. And that's why I'm a big proponent of decoding your burnout. I think it's important for everybody to really crack the code on their burnout, so that they can, once you understand what's led you to burnout, then you can find custom tailored solutions to really recover in a way that's sustainable.
Yeah. Ooh, I love that. I'm sorry. I'm really excited about that, because I love this idea of decoding your own burnout. So it's like, where do you begin with that process?
Well, so I actually created a whole course on this. And the idea there is, I've got something that I call the PEP model. And I'm looking at the three main contributing factors that really come together for each individual's specific burnout situation. And so once you're able to see what it is for you, then you've kind of cracked the code on that. So nice. the three main components are your programming, which we've talked a little bit about, but we really just scratched the surface. It goes a lot deeper than that, mm-hmm. right? Your programming is really like your whole belief system. And sometimes it's things that your brain interpreted when you were a child. So your brain wasn't totally developed at that point. You were still a kid and you're trying to make sense of why things happen the way that they do. And so sometimes your brain just comes up with some sort of idea. And this is where we come up with these limiting beliefs that then really we drag around for the rest of our lives, kind of like excess luggage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we make all of these determinations and decisions based on those decisions or those beliefs that we made early on in our life without question, because it's part of our programming. When I say that, it's kind of like this lens through which you now see the world. So every time something happens to you, you have a go-to interpretation, yeah. right? So that's part of your programming. And sometimes your programming is what other people believe that's become mm-hmm. your own. So that could be like things that your parents believed. And mm-hmm. too often, we grow up in an environment, whether it's through parents, family, friends, peers, schools, whatever it is, and we're taught something and we don't question it. And that's all we know. And then come to find out there's so many different ways of looking at the world, but we just yeah. believe this one thing. So you start to look at your programming. That's a big contributing factor. Mm-hmm. The second one is your environment, which is the one that people are most conscious of typically, because that's the thing that stresses them out. And it's external, so it's easy to point a finger and say, oh, it's out there. exactly. So that's what people usually come to me with. I don't know if you can hear that. Somebody is doing some lawn work.
This show is sponsored by Yard Work at times.
There you go.
So.
There you go.
Speaking of environments.
And then, so really the environmental factors are things like the work culture, people that you work with that might be a little bit toxic, all the things that are easy for us to point at. And it can also be life stressors. So are you somebody who maybe things are really good at work, but are you going through that horrible divorce and you're just like at your limit in terms of what you can absorb? And so you're, you know, every little thing's going to put you over the edge because there's not that much room there, you know, yeah. in your stress bucket. So we're looking at all these different environmental factors. And then the third one is your personality. Mm. And so I've really looked at the three main personality types that end up burning out. And when you understand these factors and you understand like what you're bringing into the mix, mm-hmm. then you have total clarity. And what's so important for me is for people to be able to say, now I can custom tailor my recovery strategy, as opposed to just say, oh, everybody who's burned out should just take a couple of weeks off. You'll be fine.
Right.
Because we know that doesn't work.
It doesn't?
It doesn't work.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
And you've just deconstructed a lot of people's business models right there.
What can I say? I've been known to deconstruct some things. but yeah, I mean, those are the typical things that I see is people will take a couple of weeks off, or they'll go a little bit more hardcore and they'll be like, I just need a sabbatical. Mm-hmm. Or they go even more hardcore and then they're like, I just have to reinvent myself. Like I have to change careers altogether mm-hmm. because I can't do this work and not be burned out. Right. And yeah. so when they come to see me, I always say, before you make any massive changes, let's work together and see, especially if there, look, I say this, if you really hate your job, fantastic. You don't want to do this work. Let's figure it out. Right. Mm-hmm. But I have people who love what they do and they've spent 10 years getting to the point where they're now a professional and they're doing the work that they love. They just don't know how to do it sustainably. So I come in and I say, well, if we can get you to a point where you can stay where you are, but not suffer, right? Actually thrive while getting to do the work that you love, then that's a win-win.
the whole notion of doing your work without suffering is so powerful, because it seems like there's that message, and especially in like the creative world, where you know you have the tortured artist and the creative who suffers for their art, and that inevitably leads to burnout. And so it's like when you can come in and reconstruct someone's belief about their work, that has to be an amazing experience for people.
You know, I have to say this. It's almost kind of sad that we got to this point where we accept that misery is part of work, mm-hmm. and that to not be miserable is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Like, what? How did that happen?
I wish I knew. How did it happen?
Like, this is now the norm, people, yeah. where we're just accepting the fact that we have to suffer, that we have to kind of suck it up, be mm-hmm. miserable, and just kind of power through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like that's settling.
So what's the alternative?
The alternative is figuring out how to do it smart so that you're enjoying life. I mean, really, what's the purpose of working so hard? Why are we killing ourselves with all of this work and stress? Mm. Isn't the whole point so we can enjoy our life? And I think what I've seen is like everybody now is living to work instead of working to live. And I'm like, aren't we kind of here to build a life? Mm-hmm. And work is just part of the equation.
Yeah.
When did it take over the entire equation where there's no more balance and it's just one-sided?
Yeah. Have you gone down that research trail and discovering when that started to shift?
You know, I don't know that there's an answer to that, when it started to shift. I just feel like with everything that's been going on, I mean, it's not even just Western culture, but I think this just like this worldwide culture. I mean, I'm now reading about Japan and China and South Korea, like all these places where they really prize working, and they almost had these competitions about like who's done the most work or who's mm-hmm. accomplished the most stuff. And, you know, who's working, what is it, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week. It's called like the 996. I don't know if you've heard something like that.
Oh, that sounds
awful. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a thing. It's Oof. Being celebrated. And I think only now people are starting to, which is, again, I don't understand why these things take centuries for people to figure out. But now they're like, oh, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. And I don't know if you've heard about this, but now there's what we call the Great Resignation.
Yes, I've heard that.
So this is where like people are just saying enough is enough. I don't want to do this. I don't want to be part of this culture anymore. And I'm just going to go sit at home and figure it out mm-hmm. because this isn't working. And anything but this is great.
But that doesn't seem to really get to the root of the problem to some degree if you don't know what you ultimately want to live for.
Well, exactly. I think that's why people need coaching, because mm-hmm. they're stuck. They don't really know how else to look at things. They don't necessarily know how to think about things in a new way. And it's always good to bring in that creative new blood that can look at what you're doing and figure out, you know, that's why there's a lot of career coaches and they're doing amazingly well right now.
Yeah.
Right? Because, I mean, I've been talking to career coaches and staffing personnel, mm-hmm. and the staffing personnel are really struggling to find talent because everybody's quitting. They're not looking for jobs. And the career coaches are having a great old time because everybody wants in. Yeah. Everyone's trying to figure out like who am I going to be next?
I love that question though. Who am I going to be next? Because yeah. there's so many possibilities. I mean, I think it's limitless to some degree of what we can become.
Well, one of the things that I love about the world of coaching is that it's all about asking good questions. Mm-hmm. And it's when you ask those questions that you even start the conversation about what's possible.
What's your favorite question to ask people?
Well, it's funny. When I was a therapist, when I was working on, you know, helping people through my therapy practice, the question that I used to ask a lot is, why now? Mm. And that's because, you know, people have been struggling with their stuff for a really long time, but it's like, why are you coming to therapy now and not 2 years ago? Like, what's going on right now? And it's not like a criticism, but there's usually a good reason, right? And then mm-hmm. I never really thought about that question for my burnout coaching, but I was talking to somebody just the other day and they kind of reminded me about that question. And I was like, this is such a good question because people burn out mm-hmm. for such a long time. And they don't reach out and they don't reach out and they don't reach out. And then they reach out. And then you have to ask the question, why now? Mm-hmm. Because there is a reason. It's like they've either surpassed that threshold where they can't take it anymore, mm-hmm. or their marriage is falling apart because they're never home, or because their health is deteriorated to the point where they're, you know, scared. Mm-hmm. I mean, something happened that they finally pulled the trigger and they're like, all right, I got to take this seriously. I got to get some coaching around this.
Yeah. Wow. So I love that question. Yeah, that's a great question. I'm curious about something, Sharon. When did you first become interested in burnout and see that as the path to your coaching practice?
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story. I would say this is like a two-part story. It started out with my own journey. When I was just a little kid, I would sit around the table and listen to the adults talk about their life. But a lot of them would mention how they kind of dreaded going to work. And I remember making this mental note as a kid and saying to myself, like, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to grow up and I didn't even know what I wanted to do professionally at that point. It took me a long time to figure that out. But I just remember being like 6, 7 years old and saying, I don't want to be that miserable adult that dreads going to work every day. And so I took my time to figure out what I love to do so that I don't burn out. And then when I got into private practice, I actually resisted going into private practice for a long time because mm-hmm. when I was in grad school and I go to these like psychological conferences, they're always talking about people going into private practice and burning out because, you know, you're isolated, you're seeing patient after patient and all these kinds of things. And so I was like, oh, you know, like who needs that? I'll just go work for a nonprofit. I'll clock in, clock out. I'll have my life and that's mm-hmm. good enough. And I did that for a bit. And then I realized there's kind of this glass ceiling and the only place to go up from where I was, which I ended up being like a supervisor, but from there it was really management and I wasn't interested in sitting in meetings and talking about whatever they were talking about. I was interested in doing the face-to-face work and mm-hmm. helping people transform their lives. And so I started looking around, like, where else can I work? And I found that all the options that existed out there did not suit my value, coming back to this idea. Mm-hmm. My number one value is lifestyle. And so I wasn't looking to have crazy commutes and sit in traffic and work nights and weekends. Like, you know, just all of it. I wasn't interested. And so I figured, you know what? It doesn't exist. So I have to create it. Ooh, and nice. Overnight, I became an entrepreneur. and then I said, but if I'm going to do this, I have to do it smart because I don't want to be a statistic. And so I got an office next to my gym and I would cut out in the middle of the day and go do my workouts and just kind of figured out how to minimize the stress and have plenty of time to recover and take care of myself in the process and have time for, you know, the things that I love, my family and friends and things like that. And so mm-hmm. you kind of just have to reverse engineer it sometimes. And so I started that. I was doing therapy for a while. And then I realized that I'm not your normal therapist because I don't follow the rules so well. Mm-hmm. You know, I get people, but really what I'm doing is coaching them. And so I'm like, so why don't I just coach? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, who do I love working with the most? And I really love working with super high achievers. And I'm like, well, what do they struggle with? I'm like, oh, they struggle with burnout. So that's something I can help with. And it all started coming together. And I was like, I really want to take my 20 years of experience and put it into a book. And I don't know what I'm going to write about. And then it all kind of fell into place because I started doing this research on burnout and I realized all the solutions are more or less things that I already teach and already coach on. So let's put it into some sort of a systemic step-by-step process that people can follow. And that's how my book was born.
That's amazing. I love that story so much because it aligns with, again, your values, but also looking around at the things that you are interested in, like solving and working with.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Sharon, as I've talked with people recently, burnout is one of those topics that always seems to be on the tip of everyone's tongue. And one of the questions that inevitably I ask is like, is burnout inevitable or is it avoidable?
That's a really good question. And I would say it really depends on what's going on and how well you're managing. So part of what we do when we're decoding your burnout is just trying to figure out what is your programming, because so much of that contributes to how you show up at work. So even if things aren't super stressful at the office, you're not in the super high stress industry or things like that, you might still burn out. And that's because maybe you're a people pleaser. And on top of all the things that you're already doing, you're taking on everybody else's stuff. And so now you're working triple and then you burn out, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, what makes you a people pleaser? That's your programming, right? Or are you somebody who's a perfectionist? And, you know, they might give you a manageable amount of work to do, but it takes you three times as long because you're constantly iterating and reiterating and you're trying to like get more stuff done and make it just right. I had one client who would take 6 reads of every email before she was able to press send.
Wow.
But can you imagine how much extra time that takes just to send an email?
Yeah.
So there's all these different things that contribute to people's burnout. So it's not like a yes or a no. Yes, it's totally avoidable. No, it's, you know, something that's completely unavoidable. It really is about what is happening. And I think it's avoidable in the sense that if you know what all these things are, that you can turn those things around, right? So when people burn out, it's not like, oh, you know what? You're going to stay like this for the rest of your life. There's nothing we can do. I'm very sorry.
Right.
That's not the case. From the perspective of like, is it something that you can turn around? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Is it something you can avoid if you're doing work on yourself? Yeah. But most people don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, so sometimes, as I like to say, burnout is your wake-up call.
Mm. Yeah. What is it about super high achievers that captured your attention?
Well, I guess I could just say that I admire their ambition and their motivation to contribute something of value to the world. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I can see that if they're in that tunnel vision of like just accomplishing things, they also get out of balance. Mm. And I'm somebody who, like, I consider myself to be a high achiever, but I'm not a super high achiever, I guess I would say, because I don't allow myself to overdo it too much to the point where I burn out, right? Mm. So I have to have checks and balances in place. And so I want to help coach them to, A, be able to achieve things without sacrificing themselves in the process, and B, to maybe question why it's so important for them to be a super high achiever and maybe just settle to be a high achiever.
Right.
You know?
I like that.
Because otherwise, it becomes this yo-yo kind of a thing where you're like, oh, I can do everything. And then you burn out and you're like, I can't do anything.
Right.
And it's like, maybe being a high achiever is the more sustainable way of being at work. you know, maybe like that super high achiever premise is only good for a short while, and then you really have to rethink your paradigm.
Yeah. Oof. Where my brain is going right now is that whole drive to be the best at something, to be seen as the expert, and how, in a way that, you know, that's on one hand, in many ways unattainable, but it also keeps you stuck in that drive that eventually does lead to burnout. And then you get to redefine what it means to be good at something and to be known for being good for something.
So I just read a book called Relentless, and it's written by the guy who trained all these super high athletes, including Michael Jordan. So if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. But as he's talking about all these things that he trains people on, I'm thinking this is a total recipe for burnout, right? Mm-hmm. Except that I would say if you're in that class like Michael Jordan, you're going into this knowingly. You're saying to yourself, okay, maybe I don't see my family. Maybe I don't have time for my wife. Maybe I don't have like all the things, but I get to be number one in the world, and that's more important to me than anything else. So I'm willing to sacrifice. I'm willing to not be balanced. And I think that's the only time it quote unquote can work, but it only works as long as your wife's willing to stay with you because right. you're never around. And, you know, as long as your friends like are forgiving that you don't have time for them. And as long as like everybody else is cooperating, you know,
right.
and sometimes they are because they're like, oh, you're Michael Jordan. Like, of course you don't have time.
Yeah.
Right. But there's very few people that can really make this sort of thing work. And those are the exceptions. And I say, thank God that there are people like Michael Jordan, because he's so inspiring. And we need somebody like that to look up to. But at the same time, you know, it's probably not for you and me. Like, it's probably not for most people. So the important thing is, don't kid yourself. Like, if you really need that balance in your life, if you need to take care of your health, if you're not willing to sacrifice everything just for the one thing, which is what he talks about in this book, this Relentless book, is like that you are willing to work so hard and give it everything, your mind, your body, everything, work harder than everybody else, then this is probably not for you.
Right. Oh, that's so fascinating. I love that too, because like it speaks to not only your personal values, but aligning them with the values of your friends and your family around you, so that you create almost like that link that's strong through the pursuit together of what's important.
Yeah. Well, we don't live in a bubble, so it's important to consider other people that we think are important if we want to keep them around. You know, I mean, I've actually, you know, when I was writing my book, I was interviewing, for example, some of the lawyers that are in the top firms in the world.
Wow.
These partners that are making millions of dollars a year and trying to understand what's going on for them. Yes, they're super successful, but at what price? Mm-hmm. And apparently for $3 million, you get to get divorced from your wife, and you live alone, and you spend nights and weekends at the office, and then you try to socialize with your clients, but then it's kind of a weird thing because they're like, you're my lawyer. So it's complicated.
Yeah, it sounds incredibly complicated. One of the words that I'm staring at through our conversation, and it's come up a couple of times, but is this idea of self-care. And is that just as important of decoding as is burnout?
Well, it's one of the things that people don't do because they're so busy working that leads to burnout. So it's absolutely some version of your recovery has to incorporate that, because, you know, otherwise you stay unbalanced. And that doesn't mean that, you know, people are kind of allergic to that word these days. It doesn't mean that it doesn't mean one thing for everybody. In other words, everybody has to figure out what self-care means for them. So for some people, it means meditating every morning when they wake up. And for other people, it means going to the gym. And for other people, it might mean just maybe doing some stretching or taking some breaks throughout the day and walking around the block. I mean, there's so many different things that you can do. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if it doesn't resonate with you, do something else, but do something.
Yeah. What do you do?
So I typically start my day now. I recently moved to Florida and we have beautiful weather. I'm very fortunate. And mm-hmm. what I do to start my day is now I go swim laps in an outdoor pool.
Nice.
I get my sunshine on and then I come home, I shower, I meditate, and I start my day.
Wow. What impact has that had on your productivity and the way that you engage with your work?
I tend to be hyper focused when I work. Mm-hmm. I get a lot done in a short amount of time. And then people will be like, oh, did you get my email about such and such? Because you haven't responded. And I'm like, oh, I haven't checked my email all day. You know? Because nice. I'm so in the zone. But in order for me to sustain that, I need to have certain things built in. And that's where I've got my exercise and, you know, just dietary things. And like, I just have to lead a healthy lifestyle. I have to like cut off work at a certain point. I have to like mm-hmm. spend time with my family. We have family dinners every night. I cook every night. Like, we do certain things. It's just become part of the norm. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it's just like the little things that make the big difference. You know, it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be this big bombastic thing that takes up so much of your time. And because I work with super high achievers, whenever I create a program or course or something for them, I always take into consideration the fact that they don't have a lot of time. They're always time stressed. Mm-hmm. And so I always try to make things for them that are really short and easily digestible. Nice. So that they can get what they need and then start applying it to their lives and start to like have some traction there rather than let me give you a whole saga.
Right. It reminds me of a concept in coaching called laser coaching.
Yep.
Which always kind of blew my mind. It's like, you mean you can get connection and results in like minutes? That's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I do with clients who have finished my program. So my program is not the one I was telling you about, but my my program where I help people really recover from burnout is a 90-day program, and they learn so much, and then they're like, oh my God, so much has changed. I have so much more energy. All these things are different now. But there's always like things that they want to work on that are beyond their burnout stuff, right? A lot of personal things, things around their programming, whatever it is. And so that's where I might offer them laser coaching. And you'd be amazed what you can accomplish in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And sometimes they just need that check-in, that accountability, somebody to say, this is what's happening. This is what you need to do. Go do that. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'll give them assignments. I'll give them like something that they need to implement. It's not just like, hey, nice to see you. How you been? It's not like a chit chat. It's more like, it's a work session. It's like, okay, what's going on? Okay, do this, right? And then when you're done, let's get back on another call.
And is that 90-day program called Exhausted to Extraordinary, or is that something else?
No, that's exactly what it's called.
That's cool. Yeah, I like that. I mean, that's very attractive in terms of a name, because it's like you can identify the problem and the solution all in the title.
Yeah, it just so happens to also be the subtitle to my book. So my book is called The 7E Solution to Burnout, Transforming High Achievers from Exhausted to Extraordinary.
That's awesome. And how have people responded to it?
I mean, the people who have gone through the program have had amazing results. And I always love taking people through that process because I can see the potential in them way before they have the realization that it's possible. So sometimes they get in and they're super skeptical but they have this like blind faith, or they're just like, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? I get some coaching, you know, like they can't really see what's possible for them because they're so in it. Mm-hmm. But I get excited because I'm like, oh my God, your life is going to be so amazing. And then we start working together, and within weeks, they typically come in and they'll start reporting on like, oh, I've done this or I've changed that. And, you know, they start to feel better. They start to have more hope. I mean, that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Grow from like kind of cynical, which is a big symptom of burnout, to feeling hopeful that they can have the kind of life that they want, or even sometimes it's the life they never dreamed to have because they were so in their programming that they could only see things through this little microcosm or through this like toilet paper roll, you know, and they couldn't see like all the possibilities that exist outside. So we're kind of like shattering all of these barriers, and then I'm like, oh my God, I didn't realize, you know, all these things. So it's very fulfilling for me. And I think it's great that I get to enjoy what I do, but at the same time, transform lives.
Well, Sharon, as we wrap up our time together, what's one thing you want listeners to take away from our time together?
If you're somebody who isn't really sure if you're burned out or how far along you are and what you might need to do in order to make things better for yourself, what I really suggest is that you take a little bit of time to get that quote unquote assessment done. Mm-hmm. And I've actually created a burnout checklist that you can download for free, and you can kind of get an idea of how you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so happy to share that with your listener. It's bit.ly/check. I think it's check your burnout. I'll double check that for you.
Okay.
But it's basically a great way to figure out how you're doing, and then, you know, start thinking about, based on that, what do I need to focus on?
That's fantastic. Well, as you mentioned earlier, there's a book called Relentless that was pretty interesting to you. Is there another book or podcast that's blowing your mind right now?
That's the one that comes to mind because I just read it. It's been really amazing. I do my own podcast where I talk about all different tips for people how to optimize their life. So people want to check that out. I've got, you know, weekly episodes, and there's like, I started it in January, so we're getting close to the 50th mark. So there's
What's your podcast called?
Optimize Your Life.
Cool.
And I'm going to be actually creating a burnout podcast starting in 2022, so stay tuned for that. But awesome. Yeah, I just double-checked the link, and it's bit.ly/checkyourburnout. So I encourage people to start with that and see where that takes them.
Awesome. Well, Sharon, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. I feel so connected to this topic of burnout and being able to kind of analyze programming, environment, and personality. I mean, I've learned a ton. I'm so grateful for you today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a total pleasure talking to you, and I truly hope this was helpful for people listening.
Be sure to head to gwtw.co/577 to find the link to Sharon's burnout questionnaire, as well as links to her book and her website. I really hope that you'll take some time as you wrap up 2021 to decode your own burnout and what self-care does look like for yourself in the life that you live and in the life that you want to live. I think as we head into a new year, it is the perfect time to explore these topics and really find some healthy habits for life and just to enjoy life that much more, because we could probably all use it. Could probably all use a little bit more enjoyment. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.